This is Comics Therapy, episode 33. No reviews, just analysis. Up this week, two comics from March 5th, 2014. Afterlife with Archie number 4 and Revival number 18. We also have another installment of Grief Counseling, covering The Walking Dead volumes 16 and 17, up through issue 102. Yeah, you heard that right. And after your nerd confessions, as always, it's going to be a great show. Just as a reminder, we never do reviews, but we do talk a lot, so there may be spoilers from here on out.
Hello, Comic Therapy. This is Hansel Moreno, long-time listener, first-time caller. So you asked about horror stories, and I think I have one. My friend wanted a costume designed by my girlfriend, Nancy. So he found Young Avengers issue that he liked that had a Patriot in it, like several times, so she could get a feel for the costume. And he handed it to her. They worked out the details. We go to her apartment like 2 or 3 weeks later, where she's been working on it, and we see like this pulpy mess on the bottom of the floor. And I mean, the rest of the apartment is like a hurricane hit there. It's just a mess of fabrics and then thread and needles everywhere, and she's been working on it pretty hard. So we reach down and we pick up this pulpy mess, and it's just a comic that's been folded like 40 or 80 times over because she needed it for reference, but that's all it was to her. It wasn't a comic or anything. It was just something she needed to use, so she folded it in fourths and eighths and over and over and tore pages out, and we were just staring at it like, oh god, it was just horrifying for us, and she was like not responding to it, like it didn't even matter to her, and that just chilled us to the bone. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Welcome to Comics Therapy. Neither Aaron nor I are licensed therapists, so don't take anything we say seriously. This week's theme is pretty obvious, right? Zombies. Dead men and women and children and even dogs walking. Now, before you go blaming Myers, it was my idea. I can handle it. I'm serious. Consider this episode my submission for consideration. I'm over my fear of this particular irrational anxiety, and I'm ready to tackle the next one.
Because you love zombies.
I didn't say love. I said over the fear of.
Hey, CT. One time a pipe burst right behind my closet. The water came through the wall and soaked into the carpet and my long boxes. Luckily, the Mylar bags protected most of my stuff, and in the box that wasn't bagged and boarded, the water only soaked into the cardboard where there were no comics. Whoo! That was scary, though. The other scary thing was a creepy guy with a beard demanded I send him comics or he'd have his legions of fans harass me for life. That was awful. Later, John W.
In between comic segments, your very own nerd confessions, celebrating the geeky things we all do, say, read, and enjoy. This week we asked to hear about your scariest thing you read in a comic, or the scariest thing that happened to your comics. You can call, Skype, or email your confessions. All the details are on the website, comicstherapy.com. Remember, catharsis is cool.
Hey guys, it's Leslie Latlansky on Twitter. I was just calling about the scariest thing that happened to my comics. And I'm going without a script, so hopefully I don't ramble. Last year was the first year at Emerald City, and it was the first big con that I'd gone to, and sort of first time I'd embraced my full comic geekdom. So I had, like, a bunch of stuff to get signed. And I was carrying around the bag, and I was trying to be really organized with it, because I had my kids with me. And they were getting really irritated, having to wait in line for people they didn't care about, so I could stand there and stammer at them. So anyway, at one point I ended up just kind of holding half the books, because it was just easier than digging through the bag. So we're walking around, and I had just gotten a bunch of stuff signed by Matt Fraction, and I was totally starstruck and everything, because I blame him for my comic craziness right now. So we're walking around. It's probably been 20 minutes, 30 minutes since we've been to Fraction's table. And I don't even remember where we were at, but I was getting the book out to get signed and noticed there's like 3 in my bag and none in my hand. And where are my books? And I just had a panic attack. I was standing there in the middle of a crowded con aisle in tears, shaking, freaking out. And my son, who was 11, was like, Mom, Mom. It's going to be okay. We'll just retrace our steps. calm down. It's going to be fine. And I'm like, look, my stuff, and I don't know. And so it didn't take long to get back to Fraction's table where he was like, hey, you forgot something, which was pretty embarrassing. But for a few minutes there, I thought I had lost everything that I loved signed by a bunch of amazing people. So that was my scary comic story. Thanks, guys.
In between shows, you can find me on Twitter at Andrea Shock and Aaron at Aaron Myers. And of course, the show account at Comics Therapy. So Aaron, what is your answer to the nerd confession prompt this week?
What's the scariest thing to happen? Well, what did we ask? I don't remember.
You just read it like a minute ago.
Let me look back here. Scariest thing.
What is the scariest thing that happened to your comics? Or what's the scariest thing that you've ever read in a comic?
See, it's hard for me because I can think of upsetting things. Like, scary and upsetting kind of go together for me. You know, like a lot of like The Walking Dead, like the big stuff that we've talked about or going to talk about.
Right.
I guess we're, you know, are probably the most visceral.
Okay.
So in a way it's scary, but it's so, you know, something, it wasn't like, they weren't surprises. They were just very upsetting.
Okay.
And I don't want to jinx it. I haven't had anything horrible happen at my comics. I've always been a pretty meticulous collector.
Unsurprising.
And I've never had like a water leak or anything.
Yeah.
But it easily could happen. I was talking to my insurance agent last week about how to insure them. And I've got like key things insured, but like to get the whole collection insured, I need a full inventory.
Okay, no joke. I've never actually considered the fact that you probably have to do that.
That I should insure it?
Yeah.
I don't have to. I don't have like a crazy collection.
I mean, you have enough money sunk into it that just in general.
Yeah, there are, you know, say if I took everything apart, there's like three long boxes of like key issues that would be very expensive to replace.
Right.
The rest are, you know, probably 10 cents to a dollar a piece. I want to full inventory. I tried to pay my daughter at some point to actually go through an inventory and she didn't want to do it. Kids. And I would love to. I just don't have the time.
Right.
So I think for now it'll just be like key stuff that would be kind of like irreplaceable or, you know, super expensive to replace.
So you're just in a constant state of tempting fate.
I guess, aren't we all?
Well, I mean, in regards to your comics.
I suppose.
And you're going to let me stay in the room with them in 3 weeks' time.
I don't have anywhere else to put you. I actually did consider, like, me sleeping in the comics room.
You did not.
Well, it might make more sense for me to sleep in the comics room and you to sleep in the guest room. Or Luke's room.
Oh, that's awesome.
I mean, you can have whichever you want, but you can actually have a bedroom.
I'm reasonably trustworthy.
It's not even that. It's just for comfort. You know, it's an actual bed, but...
I enjoy actual beds.
All right, well, we'll see. I mean, we can work out a price.
I'm not going to mess
with bed and breakfast rates are very reasonable. No, I know you're not going to mess with my comics. It's just a matter of having to sleep in a room full of comics.
I don't know. There's something kind of, like, awesomely appealing about going to sleep, looking up at this fucking monster tower of comics around me.
Yeah.
Very few people are going to be able to say that they've done that.
Mm-hmm. That's so true. The last person to stay in there also stole $5,000 worth of stuff from me.
See? That's a scary thing that's happened.
Yeah, but it didn't happen to my comics. It happened to my magic cards.
Okay. But you learned your lesson.
Did I?
I don't know. You're inviting me to sleep there.
Right. I don't think I did.
Aw, man.
Yeah. You know, if you can't trust anyone, then what's life worth
living? I guess.
Living?
Anything else going on with you?
Other than that, not really. I mean, life stuff, I guess. We've got an appointment with a holistic vet because we're, you know, we live in Eugene, so that's what you do.
Because you're a hippie.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And it's, you know, for Roxy, there's nothing really to be done. There's no magic, but there might be things that are a little less impactful that might ease things for her.
Okay.
So we're just trying to explore all the options.
Sure.
Yeah. So that's the, that's exciting. Yeah.
Cool. Other than that, it's just a standard week, huh?
Just standard week. Very domestic. I mowed the lawn yesterday because we had a little bit of sunshine. How about you?
It was 72 degrees today. here.
How nice.
Yep.
It's lovely.
Pretty excellent.
Mm-hmm. So what's Sorry. Your so what's your answer and what's your week?
Oh, okay. So my answer, I mean, if we're assuming that like scariest thing to happen to comics involves some sort of physical damage to the actual comics, I did lose a bunch of comics during the move from Pittsburgh to San Francisco.
How did you lose
was,
them?
The water damage.
Ugh.
They were packed not as well as they should have been. And
that was me silently saying shocking.
You weren't silent about it though. That's the thing.
I just wanted everyone to know in case the mics couldn't pick it up.
No, I think that actually, I mean, first of all, I didn't lose much in terms of value. And it's pretty well documented that I don't own much that is valuable. But that was definitely part of the ultimate decision to kind of liquidate my physical comics. Because I don't have an attachment to many, a couple, but not many of the actual, like, floppies. So losing some of them and realizing that it was kind of a pain in the ass to replace them just seemed like, okay, like, what is my goal here? If I had most of them in digital copies anyway, there was, like, really nothing pushing me to try to replace the physical copies.
Mm-hmm.
So a couple of them I did. Some that had, like, sentimental value or that I, like, particularly enjoyed the issue for whatever reason. But for the most part, I didn't really bother. And they were all, like, print individual issues. It wasn't like that I hadn't lost, like, trades or anything.
Mm-hmm.
Scariest thing that I read? Man, that's hard because like, what is scary at this point? Obviously, the earlier issues, and primarily issue 48 of The Walking Dead, bothered me tremendously, but it wasn't scary. The first couple of arcs of that were more, like, traumatic in the traditional scary way because it was the zombie introduction.
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
You know, when I was thinking about this, I think most of the scary stuff comes from being when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't really have a ton of comics, or I never had a ton of comics, but I really didn't get access to buying comics till, you know, maybe age 8 or 9 was, like, okay, the first comics I got. And none of them were particularly scary. It was stuff like G.I. Right. Joe and, you know, Hawkman and Adam and things, like, you know, like superhero stuff.
Right.
So I didn't really have, like, Vertigo books. But I did get, it was a Batman series called Venom. I guess it was Gotham. It was like a Gotham Knights series or Legends of the Dark Knight, I think. And that was kind of scary because it was sort of like Batman becomes, like, hooked on this drug that, you know, makes him strong. It's sort of like steroids, but, you know, addictive steroids that kind of also make you, it's super hard to detox. It actually holds up. But anyway.
So, like, actual steroids.
Kind of, yeah. I mean, you know, Batman steroids, whatever. Right. Comic book steroids. But I remember parts of that being pretty intense and scary. And that was, like, kind of my first, like, not, like, all ages kind of book. Mm. You know, so I guess that would be for me. But it doesn't scare me now. It scared, you know, 9-year-old
right.
Aaron.
My scary moments from when I was a kid are not related to comics. I just posted on Facebook earlier this week this kind of lovely rendition of 2-sentence horror stories, which were incredibly creative and, like, really quite deep for just being 2 sentences. And my mom, in response, because, you know, moms do this, referenced something that I was totally afraid of when I was a kid that I had forgotten about, which was a Ripley's Believe It or Not special that talked about how the Earth was going to eventually, like, be absorbed by the sun and we'll all turn into stars.
Uh-huh.
Right. And she was like, well, haha, at least now I don't have to, like, placate your fear of the Earth going into the sun, blah, blah, blah. Obviously, and I've talked about this before, I was introduced to the movie Poltergeist when I was about 4.
Mm-hmm.
And that,
yeah, right. Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. That's the, like, root for me of my very visceral response to the dark and all things paranormal. But in terms of comics, it tends to be things like, well, like, do you remember when we talked about Dream Merchant 100 million years ago?
Yes, I do.
Which, incidentally, like, where is that book? Because it was so good.
Patience.
So much patience. Because he's writing Punisher now.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think it's a writing issue. I think maybe it's just art.
Well.
Anyway.
In any case, that book really scared me. But a lot of that is me projecting, which we're going to talk about when we get to The Walking Dead, that like most of the time I'm my own worst enemy with this kind of stuff.
Sure.
Well,
I mean, like for me, like I would say my biggest fear as a kid was UFOs. Like I was deathly afraid of getting abducted by aliens.
Yeah, you talked about that.
Right.
I can't relate to that, but I think it's fascinating just because I can't relate to it.
Just, I was so into sci-fi and like when you're younger, things are real. Like this week, like Luke learned about leprechauns. So it has been nonstop questions about leprechauns.
Wait. What do you mean he learned about leprechauns?
I don't know. You know, it clicked with him, like, that leprechauns are something. So he wants to know, like, about their gold, and, like, he would take their gold, but the gold's heavy, and where do they live, and, like, how big are they? And
oh, that's adorable.
Yeah, and I remember something similar. Like, I was obsessed with finding a genie in a bottle. Like, I would think constantly, like, what would I wish for? I thought I was super clever, because I'm like, well, obviously, your third wish is to wish for a million more wishes.
Right.
I mean, like that. I'm like, I figured this out. I've totally gamed the system. And I was like, just
Wait, what were your first two?
I don't remember. Probably like for more Transformers and more Legos or something.
Right.
You know, the necessities.
Right.
So, you know, yet when you're a little kid, like fantasy and reality there's no separation. And it's nice to hang on to some of that, even as an adult.
Right.
You know, that's what makes stories and all that stuff interesting.
Well, so do you want to talk about, you know, comics?
Yeah, let's do that.
Aaron, Andrea, my favorite therapist of the comic book variety, Roderick Ruth here, at Roderick Ruth on Twitter, for this week's Nerd Confession. So the scariest thing that happened to my comics was when I went away to college and returned home for winter break. Find out that my mother went in and got rid of all my comic books that I had accrued in the 1990s. Now back then, I didn't bag and board my books, and they were usually stacked or strewn about my room. They'll rot your brain, she said. Maybe she was right. The 90s offered a lot of swill in the variety of sustainable literature and art, but it was my swill, and now I spend a lot of time in my adulthood trying to recapture those lost issues and runs. Scariest thing I read in comics was probably the old Evil Ernie series from Chaos Comics. Ernie was insanely powerful and evil, resurrected zombies, loved to murder. I see the humor in it now, but the gruesome covers and satanic undead premise used to rub me the wrong way. Phew. Catharsis is still cool. Thanks, guys.
Our first book this week is Afterlife with Archie, number 4, written by Roberto Aguirre-Sacasa, with art by Francesco Francavilla and colors by Jack Morelli. Afterlife with Archie is published by Archie Comics. I did pretty good with those names.
You did okay with those names. I'll edit it to make it sound better.
I've done much worse.
You have. I didn't really summarize these. In fact, I don't think that it's necessary to. This is a zombie story set in the Archie universe. So
there you go. But it's funny that we don't have to summarize it because the assumption is most people know, even if you've never read it, have a pretty good idea what Archie is.
True, which I'm going to get into in a little bit because I think that I'm the only one who isn't gaga over this book.
Hmm.
Okay, so this is much more of what I would consider a traditional zombie story.
Yes.
Right? At least until the zombies are all mobilizing at the end of this issue.
Mm-hmm. Well, then it's sort of a, I don't know, like a George Romero kind of like Army of the Dead kind of thing.
Sure. But we have that like panic, that confusion, and like the denial, which is it's actually a pretty standard homage to like the earlier, like Night of the Living Dead type stuff.
Yeah.
Not necessarily the genesis of the infection, but just the way that it spreads. And it is mildly self-aware. Like, appropriately tropey. It's definitely not scary. It's too predictable for that. And I know that the dog stuff bothered you, so we don't have to talk about that if you don't want to.
No, we can talk about it. It's fine.
I'm just curious if you think that this would be, like, worth writing home about if it wasn't taking Archie characters that have been in the public consciousness for, like, 4 generations and then putting them in this scenario. Because it's a bit of... What did we say the other day? Nostalgic exploitation. Yeah. Because zombies are really hot right now.
Of course. But that's exactly what they're doing. They know this. So it's got two things. It's taking the Archie comics characters we know so well and expect, you know, there's a pretty defined expectation for those kind of characters in that world. Putting it in a very adult, not, you know, all ages, not for kids kind of setting. Plus, right. You have Frank Avella's art, which to me, I find it hard to imagine this book without his art in it.
I agree.
So I don't think it's a being negative, you know, a knock on this book saying it's self-referential and, you know, exploitive of the genre, because that's exactly what it is. But to me, it's really well done. I'm reading a book that I'm compelled to read.
Mm-hmm.
And like even stuff like the dog thing. I mean, that is definitely written to tear at your heartstrings.
Right.
I mean, you know, it bothered me because it bothers me to have an animal who is so loyal to a person throw themselves into harm's way to save someone.
So can I share what you said, what you texted to me when you read it?
Sure.
I mean, you were pretty definitive, like, fuck Archie, I'm super done with this. Are you actually done with this?
No, of course not. I was just upset at the time, and I kept reading.
Well, but that's like a very powerful moment in a book that, I guess that's my point, is that I'm not getting the same kind of powerful reaction to this book that a lot of other people are. And part of it, I think, is that I didn't read Archie books when I was a kid.
But I didn't either. I was just aware of the world, of the Archie world.
Sure. But in this case, your touchstone is about the dog.
Yeah, but not in the previous issues.
Right.
And I was still on this book from issue one.
Okay.
I mean, even when I saw the flyers for it, you know, months ago, and we were even joking at the store, I'm like, oh, like Archie's doing a zombie book, and we all kind of laughed and everything. And then I saw it's a cover by Frank Avella. That's pretty cool. And I'm like, oh, the interiors are by Frank Avella. And then you see the preview art, and you're like, what? This is totally crazy. Like, I thought it was going to be like an Archie book. But then you have like Jughead stumbling down the street, and he's, you know, a zombie. But it's traditional Archie art.
It's the creator that you're connecting with. And now the extra layer of the dog loyalty, you know, story framework is what you're connecting with. I think that that's what I'm missing.
It's the style. It's written more like a Vertigo or Dark Horse book.
Except that there's not a whole lot of innovation happening. And I think that, like, look, I thought it was fine. I continue to think it is fine. But a lot of conversations have taken place kind of around me about how amazing this is. And I'm just not at that level emotionally connecting to it.
Yeah,
I can appreciate it, but I can't necessarily back it as something that is like so fucking mind blowing because I don't have the connection to the characters. In terms of creators, like I appreciate what Frank Avella does, but he's not near the like top for me.
Mm.
And so I do think that it's essential that this is not drawn like a traditional Archie book. Otherwise, it would be, like, game over. It would just be sort of, I don't know, like, absurdly comical, but in the wrong way. So
yeah,
his presence is necessary. And there are some, like, lovely moments visually. But still, I think that I'm just, I can't appreciate it with the same kind of nostalgia that a lot of other people can. Because I didn't grow up reading Archie books.
Sure. No, that's understandable. If you're not a Archie aware or even have any kind of caring, like in the last year for me, Archie has been more in my kind of reading schedule. I've been picking up Archie books when I've been finding them cheap because they're good books to read or look at with Luke.
Right.
Because I'm not too worried. Like Archie's a very weird comic as an adult to read in some ways.
Sure.
Because a lot of the writing in them will go over kids' heads, but, you know, there's some weird stuff, especially if, like, I find things from, like, the 60s and 70s. You know, there's a whole other layer of funny to it because it's pretty sexist in a lot of ways.
The older stuff is, especially.
Yeah.
I actually think that the more modern stuff is pretty amazing in terms of the issues that they're dealing with, like, right out in the open.
Oh, yeah.
I think the whole Kevin storyline that we even get a little bit of a touch of with, I never remember their names, Ginger and like the two cheerleaders who are dating,
uh-huh.
that they're like dating on the down low. And they talk about in this series how they can't be as like out and open as Kevin is. I think that's great. And I've actually read most of those stories like more recently, way more than I ever was exposed to it earlier.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not that I don't have an awareness of the universe, and it's not that I don't have a acceptance of the like character types and the like expectations for their behavior. I think that there's just not a lot of, there's nothing new here that I am emotionally responding to, either in the Archie world or in the zombie world. That's all.
That's fine.
Not a like dismissal of the book, because I'm still going to continue to read it. I'm actually interested to see how it will play out, because it is mildly self-aware. And so I think that they could have some fun with it as the story continues. It's just that right now, it's a pretty like status quo zombie story.
Yeah, yeah, sure. I'd say the first issue has a lot of like the setup and like the emotional hooks in that are, I think, are fully solid. You know, fine, you could say a lot of books are, follow this, a similar, whatever, you know, they don't break the mold. But if they're done well, they're still good reads.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, absolutely. I mean, that's all I'm saying with this. Like, mind-blowing, maybe not. A big surprise for me over what I was expecting, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
Past that now, still compelling. So, you know, read it.
Well, I think a little bit for you, the layer of the dog, like, loyalty question, which is probably not going to continue. Let's be honest.
Well, we know it's not.
Sadly. Right? That's not going to be...
At the end, we know it's not.
Right. So that won't be something that, like, draws you in or, like, angers you or frustrates you or, like, in any way kind of captures your, like, emotional response.
I kind of like that better, though. Like, as opposed to, like, The Walking Dead, I don't... you know, if Archie gets killed... I'm not going to cry.
Right.
Because Archie's also not really getting killed. And nobody's really getting killed, but like, versus, say, The Walking Dead, you're invested in those characters because you've been reading them for 10 years.
Oh, man, I can't wait till we start talking about that.
Well, let's not put the cart before the horse. But, you know, it's a different kind of setting. Like, obviously, we know this is like an Elseworlds book, you know, in terms of like a DC kind of reference.
Yeah. There's no, like, lasting consequences here.
Yep.
But that's interesting. But I do think that it's worth pointing out, like, unless it was set in this universe or in another kind of similar existing universe that's turned on its head because of this zombie apocalypse phenomenon, it would not generate the kind of conversation that it's generating. That's all.
No, I agree.
Okay.
Yeah, it's brought talent and a different type of storytelling than we've seen from the Archie world. And that is noteworthy.
Okay.
You know, does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
Just as a side note, too, I'm still reading Rover Red Charlie.
Mm. Just as a side note, I'm out of beer.
Okay, well, too bad. We're recording a podcast. Eyes on the prize. Ready to talk about our second book?
I am.
Okay.
Hello, comic therapist. Victor Von Zoom here, writing in with this week's confession. Pretty much every collector's nightmare happened to me almost 10 years ago when Hurricane Katrina tore apart the southern Gulf Coast region. It ripped the roof off my house and water flooded up to what would have been my ceiling and didn't go down much for several weeks to come. I had been a fanatical comic book collector since 1975, so every issue was washed away or covered in swamp, gunk, and oil. The insurance companies fought our claim, and silly me, I didn't save any receipts. And besides, I had water damage, and the insurance companies argued that it was wind damage. Lesson learned? It's only stuff. Also, if you live in the lowlands, sooner or later, everything gets washed away. But cheer up! I have a new room full of books since 2005, and I'm slowly rebuilding my favorite arcs and runs. Tom. Enjoy every sandwich.
Our second book is Revival Number 18, written by Tim Seeley. Art is by Mike Norton, with colors by Mark Engelert. And lettering is by Crank. Revival is published by Image Comics.
Okay, so every time I figure this book out, I'm wrong. It's a little bit weird because there's a lot that feels familiar here. It goes outside of the comfort of the zombie cliche. It's more of comic book type convention. We have like the loner kid who talks to his toys, who knows more about what's going on, but whom no one believes. We have the female protagonist who's returned from the dead with that kind of certain measure of superhuman powers, but a lack of information about the big picture. We have, of course, the larger framework of an unfolding mystery for characters and readers, where our point of view is like active in the investigation, but we don't know more than what is revealed as it's revealed. And even in this situation where we have like the small town law enforcement angle, it's very familiar ingredients, but they're arranged in a new way. Mm-hmm. So I can handle that. But it's not scary to me because there's not enough horror content. Mm-hmm. So I think I mean that two ways. I mean that like as a genre. And then I also mean that as like a description of the action. It's that slow tension build of the rural noir. Mm-hmm. So it's like intricately unfolding puzzle, like less of that like shock and awe of a scary movie and more of a like sit back and let things build until they explode over.
Sure. Yeah. Okay.
But I still don't necessarily know what the path is before us.
Yeah, but do you need to?
No.
I mean, it's sort of like a Morning Glories kind of thing.
It is. It's very similar to a lot of the books that we talk about, like, between the two of us, but not necessarily on the show. Like, Mind the Gap and Morning Glories and, like, these kind of long puzzles where bits and pieces are revealed, mm-hmm. but we don't ever have all of the information to be a step ahead of the characters.
Yeah.
Generally, I'm not a big fan of dramatic irony. So this one, though, like, I almost wish that it was a little bit more, man, I can't believe I'm going to say this. I wish it was a little scarier. I think at times the pacing gets in the way of my emotional response. Like, I'm not surprised by anything.
I think there have been some pretty interesting story developments. I would agree that I haven't been scared at all with this, but I have been intrigued almost with every issue.
Of course, but that's a big difference.
Yeah, yeah. I would say yes, but that's also a good way to get a wider audience, you know,
okay.
as opposed to having it be a scary thing. Or always ending on this cliffhanger where you're nail-biting, you know, the whole time.
Okay.
I still find the larger mysteries at play to be the most compelling part, and that's why I keep coming back. Like,
yeah.
I want to know about these creatures that are some, you know, inhabiting bodies or doing what, animating the dead and bringing them back, and people are kind of locked into this, you know, zone, you know, so it's sort of this comprised little world. And mm-hmm. what happens with that and what is going on with all the people there. And you're starting to learn these characters. And it takes a long time for that to unfold. You either make the world a lot smaller, you make it a very small town.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you have it as a bigger area like this, it's going to take, 50 issues before we get anywhere major.
Mm-hmm.
So it's fine. To call this like... And it's also not really a zombie book.
No, it's definitely not. There's reanimation of the dead. That's the premise that we have right there. And then there's the motive of the dead, or the motive of the reason behind the reanimation of the dead,
mm-hmm.
which lends itself to kind of the like horror overarching theme.
Yeah.
And various revivers have reacted differently depending on I'm not sure what, and I think that that's actually the part that I find the most compelling,
mm-hmm.
is the individual story of the revivers and, like, why some have been able to hold on to their humanity more successfully than others.
Mm-hmm.
In some cases, the actions were very horrific, were very kind of traditionally zombie-like in terms of like physical attacking of like the surviving humans around them.
Mm-hmm.
But then we kind of unpack it further and we learn a little bit about why some of that happened. And it's still horrific, but it's a little bit more justified. I guess I'm thinking of, I'm so bad with character names right now, but like the father who had been in a like comatose state,
uh-huh.
who then kind of attacked his daughter and stepson because they had put him in that state to begin with, right? So
right.
like, I'm not advocating that, obviously, but we hear his side of the story and it's pretty fucked up, but at least it's not random. So I think that that's the intention behind the horror is what sets the individual stories in Revival apart, because the violence isn't, for the most part, the violence isn't random. The kind of death and destruction isn't like this kind of arbitrary reaction to the state of the world like it is in Archie or in The Walking Dead.
Yeah, I agree. It's to me, this is more, there's a lot more sci-fi to it, too.
Okay.
Than like a,
why?
Things like harvesting organs of, you know, people that have been revived for like black market sale or,
sure.
you know, radioactive cows or something. And, you know, these...
Yeah, but isn't that like a red herring?
I don't know. Is it?
I don't know.
Not after this last issue. Because she
really?
Got... Well, didn't she get covered in the blood and then she has all these like lesions and stuff all over her body?
Really?
Yeah. That's the...
I mean, I understand that.
So
I guess
I
didn't make that connection in terms of it's hard to separate like kind of the natural development of what happens with the revivers themselves and with like any external influences.
Mm-hmm.
Like the whole tooth thing,
mm-hmm.
where in some cases like individuals reacted more strongly to that phenomenon than others.
Yeah.
And the little girl, Jordan, right? Who cuts off her eyelids.
Yeah,
there's a lot. Don't get me wrong. There's a lot of crazy happening. There's a lot of very strong potential for like horrific disaster.
Mm-hmm.
More in a like mysterious, slow burn kind of way than anything that's going to cause me to have like a more immediate, surprising reaction to.
I agree, but that's kind of part of the reason I like the book, too.
Yeah. None of what I'm saying is bad. I'm just making a distinction.
Fair enough. Do you want to talk about some Walking Dead?
I don't know. Are you done with the other two?
I think so.
Because I've put a lot of thought into this, so...
Well, let's see what you think.
Okay.
Hey, guys. Jason Sachs here, at Jason Sachs on the Twitter. That's Sachs with a K, not Sachs with an H. So, no cartoonist has ever scared me as much as Steve Bissett. From the first time I laid eyes on a page he drew in a Dracula story for Bizarre Adventures number 33 from 1982 called The Blood Bequest, I worked desperately to find anything I could find by this man who had an amazing ability to conjure up images that seemed to come straight from the gates of hell. Seriously, search high and low for that story because it's fucking breathtaking. It's written by Steve Perry and inked by John Totleben, and it's a black and white story that seems to be channeled from a horrific abattoir. In fact, the story begins with a field of dead bodies and terrible destruction that scares me just to think about it. Literally, in 15,000 comics read in my lifetime, maybe more, it's the single most terrifying image I can think of. Bissett and Totleben completely sell the story with a gorgeous ink wash and depth of field that invokes real horror and revulsion in the reader's mind. The scene with the dead bodies seems to stretch forever. Just a giant square mile full of dead bodies that have been ravaged by the armies of Vlad Tepes, which shows the horrors that Dracula was even before he was a vampire himself. And then, remarkably, the story gets even more terrifying after that scene, invoking vicious demons and petty terrors that bespeak a dark other world that seems right behind our calm world. If we only look behind that small corner, we'll see the horrors that are stretching behind us. And maybe that's why the story scared me so much. You know that sound in your wall? It might be from insects, it might be from mice, or it might be from those beings from hell who will soon ravage you. Ah! Oh yeah, and Beset and Total Man moved from that one-shot story to a little series called Swamp Thing with a little-known writer named Alan Moore. On Swamp Thing, the team created even more chilling horror. Who can forget the terrifying issues with Etrigan the Demon? But I'm not going to discuss Alan Moore Dead Another Week. That's kind of a cliche, and homie don't do cliches.
All right, it's time for grief counseling. I've missed it. Have you missed it? Last summer, Andrea started reading The Walking Dead for the show. Through the ups and downs since then, and there were many times she threatened to quit, I didn't think we'd see the day. We are truly blessed, for she has finished the 100th issue, and now we're going to hear about it. I'm sure you'll join me in hoping there will be crying. But I don't think there will be, because you love zombies, you love The Walking Dead, and you love me for making you read it.
No.
We're changing, like, we're actually going to change this from grief counseling to, like, joy talking. That's a working joy title. We'll figure it
joy
out.
Joy talking. Oh man, that's hilarious. We are done in terms of grief counseling and The Walking Dead, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to think about what's next.
I don't know. It'll be something like a Clockwork Orange kind of thing where we have to pin your eyes open and just make you watch, like, snuff films or something.
That's sick, dude.
Well, you know, we got to take it to the next level.
No, it's got to be something that has an emotional reaction.
You don't think you'd have an emotional reaction to that?
Well, yes, but A, it's not comics, and B, that's super fucked up.
Yeah, well, no one ever said it's going to be easy. It's all about conditioning. So we've gotten you to the point where Walking Dead doesn't bother you anymore.
Right, so tap into something else.
I don't know, like bamboo shoots underneath your fingernails?
Okay, this is still sick.
Well, you can't put me on the spot. I'm not good at torture, like, on the fly.
Wait, no, you told me the other day what it was going to be next.
What was it going to be next?
I don't remember.
I don't remember either. Like,
another book that I'm going to have an emotional reaction to.
I don't know. I can never tell with you. You're so emotional. It's hard to determine what will get you to react.
So, anyway, I have been thinking about this a lot. I mean, partially because I knew that you were going to put me on the spot, but, like, also a little bit because self-analysis is, like, kind of my hobby these days.
Yeah.
So
we all need hobbies.
Right. Comics. Whatever. So I'm in a much different place, like, mentally and physically than I was when I started reading these.
Mm-hmm.
Don't worry. I'm still, like, very confident in my inability to survive an apocalyptic catastrophe. But I think the biggest difference is that I'm able to accept that this is a story, okay? It's not about whether I would live or die or whether Avi would.
Mm-hmm.
So I can read it and I can appreciate it. I can separate myself from it and not feel guilty about that.
Good. That's a healthy place to be.
I know, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's made me contemplative of larger societal trends. The structure that we rely on without even acknowledging.
Mm-hmm.
These last two volumes, they go into the dream of community for the first time. So, like, back to me. I am very good at what I do. And I will be the first and the loudest advocate for the arts as long as everybody has something to eat and a place to sleep and feels safe and secure. So if you look at, like, Maslow's hierarchy of needs, a lot has to be in place before you can get to the point of needing creative enrichment. And I live with that privilege. I'm a product of that privilege. I'm, like, arguably overeducated as a result of that privilege. So I have a vested interest in providing that for others. And when you look at the hilltop in these last two volumes, it represents the first time that, like, Rick sees that need. He sees what it's doing to Carl and everybody else to be only focused on survival. And they're not living with that privilege. They're not living with creative enrichment or, like, nurturing talent or any kind of personal expression or blah, blah, blah.
Right.
So they're luxuries that have to, like, by their very nature, have to be squelched down. But I don't know, like, maybe in the safety and the community of the hilltop, they could find a place in their daily lives. And that's why Negan's attack is so devastating. Like, they finally got to the point where they could start thinking about living again. And then they're reminded in the most violent and intimate and heart-wrenching way possible that death is imminent.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's where I'm at with this book.
Well, okay, but can we talk... So, I have to say, I was disappointed with what your reaction to issue 100 was.
Why?
I don't know, because I had such a strong reaction to it myself.
But you have to remember that you read this, like, issue to issue to issue, right?
Yeah. So, to me, though, it should be...
it should be entirely different.
I don't know. To me, it seems like if I was reading it as a trade, it would be even worse.
Why?
Because it just happens, you know? Like, you'd be reading through it, and it's like, oh, no, this is going to happen, as opposed to, like, okay, they get captured, and, oh, okay, what's going to happen? Like, you have a week to kind of, like, come to terms that something bad is going to happen?
No way. It was absolutely guaranteed that something, absolutely devastating was going to happen.
Yeah, but in a way, I feel like you've been warned of that for months.
Okay. So. I accept that. I have been warned that issue 100 is going to be the thing that breaks me, blah, blah, blah. But I want to make sure that everybody fucking knows that I didn't spoil it for myself.
Okay.
So I didn't know exactly what was going to happen. And I'm not saying that it doesn't suck totally that Glenn gets bashed to hell in issue 100. He was lovely. And the thing that he represents and the family that he represents and the hope, especially with Maggie, like, expecting a child... that's fucking bullshit. It totally sucks that he's dead. He's been one of my favorites from the very beginning. But I think that my reaction to, like, when Rick's family dies was much more like Andrea reacting and projecting.
Mm-hmm.
And this is me reacting to the story with that, like, harsh separation from fantasy and reality. And that's, like, a much healthier response.
Yeah, I suppose so. Maybe, both of those issues, you know, where bad stuff happens, were equally... No, I would say the prison, it was harder. Mm-hmm. But issue 100 was still... I think the visuals are what got to me in issue 100.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, that's the stuff I couldn't get out of my head.
Hmm. I don't know. I still remember and can, like, conjure up very easily that, like, full page moment of when Rick's wife is shot and, like, the baby and, like, no, I don't want to talk about it because that still bothers me.
Yeah.
Like, viscerally.
Yeah. See, what bothered me more about issue 100 is, like, Glenn is helpless. You know, it's that...
They are,
but there's a less of a helplessness when the governor's attacking the prison. You know, like, they're, at least you're, like, you're, I don't know, your arms are free. Like, everyone is helpless to move or they will die. Mm-hmm. And you have to just watch, you know, someone who's basically family to them at this point get their head bashed in and plead for their life, not die even on the first swing, you know?
Right.
Like, those visuals and that feeling of, like, helplessness was what was so kind of too much for me.
Okay. The only other thing that I'm going to say, though, is that in terms of, like, character appeal, the governor has nothing redeemable about him.
Oh, I agree. When we get more into joy talking, like, and you get caught up, I think Negan is the most fascinating of all the characters so
far. He's hilarious.
He's also very, he has a very defined rule set in this world that has no... you know, no laws anymore. He lives by his laws.
Yeah.
And if the people that have put themselves under his control live by those laws, you know, harmony exists within the group.
Right.
And it is hard, you know, it's a harsh dictatorship.
Sure.
In a world that does not allow for democracy.
Right. And I'm not, again, like, I'm not advocating that as, like, a approach to life right now. But the fact is that we don't live in any kind of post-apocalyptic disaster right now. And so it doesn't do me any good or anybody else any good to, like, project themselves into this world because it's not our world.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's why I find him the most fascinating of the villains, because I don't feel he's as much of a villain as people portray him to be.
Now, I haven't read Beyond 102, mm-hmm. so I don't want to put myself into a place to be some sort of like...
No, it's premature to start talking about it. Like, once you get caught up, then we'll talk about it again.
But just in terms of what I've seen so far, the level of depravity with the governor was, like, unacceptable to me. Mm-hmm. That was the things that he did in the name of his, like, personal leadership fulfillment were disgusting. And they were also, on a very individual level, like, not... There was no need for him to extend his power as strongly as he did on an individual level. You have to admit that, like, Negan made a statement in front of the group, in front of his group, that was very powerful. But he didn't drag it out. It's not like he killed, like, all but two of them or all but even one of them. He made a statement. It was disgusting. It was violent. It was horrible. But then he let them go. I don't think the governor would have done that type of thing. No. And he did all of his stuff behind closed doors with his, like, own kind of sick sense of whatever, entitlement and, like, disgusting sexual bullshit stuff. So to me right now, at least at this moment, there is such a significant difference in appeal for their character that, you know, whatever, I'm fine. But I don't think I need this to be like a grief counseling segment moving forward. I'm never going to get to the point where I'm reading this like month to month. I will probably continue to read it in trades because I do actually appreciate the like absorbing it in chunks. Mm-hmm. I have the next one. I think the most recent one was just released and I'll like periodically get caught up. But I don't think that we're going to have any continuation of like, hey, let's talk about The Walking Dead in grief counseling because I'm not there with this book anymore.
It's good. You're cured.
I guess.
Yeah. Now you're going to start stockpiling food. Have guns.
No. Mm-hmm. No.
Get your survival kit. Get your go bag.
I don't think that is a natural, realistic response to this either.
No, probably not. Then why did I do it?
I don't know if I can make a comment that is, you know, fair to you and our audience.
Wow. Harsh. All right. Well,
no.
Well, we should.
I'm showing restraint.
We should just. We should just end it there.
With me demonstrating restraint.
Yeah. Like, let's not push it. take our wins when we find them.
Good point.
Yeah. I think.
Can we be done with zombies for a while?
Maybe. Zombies are kind of everywhere. That's the problem.
I know, but I guess can we be done with them being like your and everybody else's go-to, like, haha, Andrea can't handle zombies because I think I've proven that I can.
No, that will not change. I mean, unless right. It will change if I can find something else to make fun of you for. So
I think that there's like ample opportunity.
Sure, but if you could compile a list for me, that would really kind of save me some time and I could start working on some material.
Okay, that's good.
Good. Well, good, it's good that we have a shorter show this week, so I have some time to work on that kind of stuff.
Right. Good goals.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Comics Therapy, this is Camarillo Brillo, a.k.a. Carl Smith, for people who like boring names. I'm calling in with the scariest thing that's ever happened to my comics for your nerd confession or comic confession. What are we calling this now? Two-headed something? Anyway, the scariest thing that ever happened to my comics happened back in the 1990s, early 90s, when I was going to college. Actually, probably the first year I was up at college. And we had tiny little dorm rooms at the Christian college I went to. And somehow I managed to navigate a 32-ounce 7-Eleven soda off my desk and upended it over my long box. It was pretty brutal, and it was pretty well covered. Not much escaped the pop. But the good news is I was dedicated to the art of not only bagging and boarding, but tightly scotch taping my comic shut, which I do not do at all right now. But most of my comics survived. I had to replace replace a lot of plastic and board, though. It was pretty sticky stuff, and only a few of my comics got ruined. I remember pulling a lot of my old Star Wars comic books that I had since I was a child out of them, and there was probably about an inch or two of sticky Mr. Pibb soaking through their pages. Unfortunately, they ended up in the trash. So, lesson to everybody, don't go to Bible college. Thanks, guys.
So I guess that's it for this week. We don't have an interview, but we've talked about a lot of comics.
We have, more than we usually do.
Yeah, so you're welcome. I'm sorry. Do we need an outro? Everyone knows where to find the show. If you're listening
Everybody
to this, I assume you do.
Yep.
It is on comicstherapy.com. Order comics from your retailer or pre-order them online. Yada, yada, yada. And we'll see you next week.
Sounds like a plan.
See you next week.
Hey, Tom, it's Bob from the office down the hall. It's good to see you, buddy. How have you been? Things have been okay for me, except that I'm a zombie now. I really wish you'd let us in. I think I speak for all of us when I say I understand why you folks might hesitate to submit to our demand. But here's an FYI, you're all gonna die screaming. All we wanna do is eat your brains. We're not unreasonable, I mean no one's gonna eat your eyes. If you open up the door, we'll all come inside and eat your brain.
The scariest thing that ever happened to my comics is one time someone wanted to, this is so horrible, someone wanted to put them in airless, see-through plastic bags like they were just animals on display. And, you know, prop them up with these hard back sleeves and just tape them there and leave them there just in a dark box. They call them organized. I call it sick.